to 2 p.m. September 12th and 8:15 a.m. to 6 p.m. September 21st. Appointments are required for immunizations. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68Nurse, MidlandHealth.org. Mobile Testing Center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab /PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68Nurse or 432-221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601. ercare24.com /Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab /PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab /PCR and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, will need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders. West Tex Urgent Care, 3401 Greenbrier Drive, 201-1403. WestTexUrgentCare.com. That's WestTexUrgentCare.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. All COVID-19 testing must begin with a virtual visit. Steward Medical Group COVID-19 testing, swab tests by appointment only. Complete Care Midland, 1701 North Loop 250 West Midland, 522-5033. City watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. City Hall to reopen. City Hall will reopen to the public on Tuesday. Residents may enter using the doors on the building's south side. The City of Midland will continue to practice the standard precautions to mitigate the spread of the coronavirus, including requiring face masks while in City Hall and promoting social distancing. Today in history, on September 5th, 1972, the Palestinian group Black September attacked the Israeli Olympic delegation at the Munich Games, killing 11 Israelis and a police officer. German forces killed 5 of the gunmen. Houston area town highlights role of post office by Molly Hennessy Fisk, Los Angeles Times. Kendleton. Two black residents whose ancestors built this rural town amid cotton fields 50 miles southwest of Houston, 77451, is more than a zip code. It's very important for us to keep our identity. That's our address, our zip code, said Mayor Daryl Humphreys Sr., because of all the fighting and the work that my forefathers did. Kendleton began when slaves were freed in Texas in 1865, more than 2 years after emancipation. William Kendall sold them 100-acre plots of his plantation along the San Bernard River, south of Houston. Many signed the land deeds with a mark because they were illiterate. Those first settlers turned Kindleton into a freedmen's colony with its own school, church, cemetery, and a mercantile that contained a post office. As the political fight over recent cuts to the U.S. Postal Service and changes to vote by mail plays out across the country ahead of the presidential election, it's highlighting the vital role of post offices in rural communities such as Kindleton, where black people have long had to fight for the right to vote. Humphrey, 57, a retired electrical lineman, counts the town's first mayor among his ancestors. Other black farmers managed to buy land during Reconstruction, but it was often taken through inflated assessments, tax sales, and theft by white farmers. But Humphrey's family kept their land, as did many others in Kindleton. Humphrey grew up attending Juneteenth celebrations at the picnic grounds that drew black crowds from across surrounding Fort Bend County. The Kindleton postmaster, like the mayor, school principal, and other leaders, was black, but they operated in a still segregated South, where since 1889, Dixiecrat Democrats, called Jaybirds, handpicked candidates before elections, ensuring they were white. Local black leaders braved death threats to file a successful class action lawsuit, which reached the U.S. Supreme Court in 1953, overturning the whites' only primaries. They renamed a street in town after one of the plaintiffs, Willie Melton, and in 1993, the government erected a freestanding brick post office there with a plaque out front commemorating the landmark lawsuit. In the years that followed, the post office scaled back its hours and required residents to pay for one of about 1,000 boxes, even as Kindleton grew. When the government tried to close the post office in 2011, locals protested, lobbied state lawmakers, and kept it open. More recently, Humphrey has been fighting to ensure that online orders and associated sales tax revenue go to Kindleton. Often, mail, including his, is automatically routed to the neighboring town of Beasley. When Humphrey calls customer service, he ends up arguing, "How can I live in Beasley? I'm the mayor of Kindleton." About 1,000 people live within the city limits, about 2,000 more in the surrounding area, the mayor said. During the pandemic, Kindleton post office window hours were reduced to 2 hours, 10 a.m. to noon. Many residents who had started to vote by mail because of their age and the pandemic heard about U.S. Postal Service cutbacks ahead of the presidential election and grew concerned. Humphrey doesn't trust the Trump administration not to use his post office as a pawn, even after the Postmaster General promised to suspend any cuts until after the election. "They tell you something and do something else the next hour or so," Humphrey said. Charlene Contreras opened the Kindleton post office on a recent Wednesday and unloaded mail wearing her usual blue uniform and a mask with the words, "I can't stay home. I'm a postal worker." First to arrive was Trenesha McCullough, 37, a certified nurse assistant who said she usually voted in person at a polling place inside Kindleton Church of God. She said she was worried about older neighbors who could no longer drive, including her 70-year-old mother. "You've got people who don't have that option of voting in person," she said, before picking up a package containing a Christian self-help book. Jessie Mae Jackson, 77, said she didn't trust herself to drive even a few miles to neighboring Beasley or Needville. She votes by mail and relies on the Kindleton post office. "I hope the good Lord it stays open," she said as she came to pick up her mail. Jackson moved to Kindleton as a child, picking cotton with her mother. She never learned to read or write. She defines her political affiliation as righteous and feels strongly about voting to improve the country. It's divided. God is not about dividing his people, she said. Most of those visiting the post office that day were black, a few white or Latino, including a Republican who planned to vote in person for Trump. Eugene Torres Jr., 58, a disabled farm and construction worker, said he would vote for Trump again because of the president's support for Israel. Torres sends money to Israeli widows and orphans, and on that Wednesday received a letter from a Bible translation nonprofit labeled Christians Condemned. He wasn't afraid the upcoming election would be affected by changes to the post office. God will handle it, Torres said, and if anybody messes with the vote, his wrath will come down on us. Arthur Hill, 59, a disabled carpenter in a Western Snap shirt and KN95 mask, said he had watched Michelle Obama speak at the Democratic Convention about how lives are at stake in this election and thought, she's speaking the truth. It gave me cold chills, he said. Hill grew up in Kendleton, where his family farmed cotton on land his ancestors bought for 50 cents an acre. That's now like gold. He worries about local votes being stolen because it's always been a problem of purloining things here. Instead of cuts, Hill said the government should provide the local post office with more resources ahead of the election. They need help, he said. On the other side of town, across the railroad tracks, retired postal worker Catherine Ford was leading a tour of the local museum, including exhibits about the post office, the voting rights struggle, and George Floyd, made by her granddaughter, who is dating Floyd's brother. We have survival skills, she said. It's in our DNA. But Ford, 82, who votes by mail, said the Postal Service has been handicapped by cuts, including reduced hours and equipment. They've removed so much, she said. Franklin Crump, 64, a U.S. Army veteran, also worked for the U.S. Postal Service for years at a Houston processing center before retiring 5 years ago to Kendleton. He worries postal workers won't have the resources to simultaneously process mail-in ballots and daily mail. I'm thinking they're going to have to stop this for the ballots, Crump said as he picked up his mail, including a prescription from the Veterans Administration. This is a priority, he said, of the medication. I don't know how they're going to handle that. Crump was inclined to vote by mail because of the pandemic, to be safe, and said he was waiting for a ballot any day now. But he plans to decide closer to the election whether he must go to the polls in person, risking his life like his forebears to ensure his vote counts. Distributed by Tribune Content Agency. New rank. Adrian Sanchez, a Midland High School graduate, right, recently advanced to the rank of Petty Officer Third Class and received the coveted Blue Jacket of the Quarter Award on board USS Ramage, a guided missile destroyer that is homeported in Norfolk, Virginia. Sanchez is an information systems technician and helps ensure reliable use of satellite connectivity and IP services while both pierside and at sea. Fall is the time to plant trees, green leafy veggies. It is time to start your fall plantings. All gardening doesn't happen during spring. There are still so many things that can grow during the cooler months. During these months, you should be taking out your summer flowers and veggies and cleaning out your beds. It is the perfect time to begin planting cabbage, lettuce, and spinach seeds. You can also begin planting herb seeds such as parsley, dill, fennel, garlic, and cilantro. Your tomatoes and peppers should begin producing fruit again. Your trees will begin losing their leaves, and it is important to rake these up and add them to your compost pile. They are a hot commodity for any gardener who loves to compost, so ask around your neighborhood if anyone needs some compost materials. Just make sure the leaves have not been treated with any chemicals. Lastly, make sure that you take advantage of the cooler weather to start planting some trees. The cooler temperatures will give a tree a better chance of establishing itself and have a great first bloom in the spring. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 686-4700 or go to aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org or email jeanette.costanone@ag.tamu.edu. Jeanette Costanone, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension. Blackberries are inexpensive, easy-to-grow plants. Blackberries make a wonderful, inexpensive, and easy-to-grow addition to your garden. With water, preferably drip irrigation, some shade, and a bit of nitrogen during the growing season from compost or fertilizers, you can enjoy fresh berries in early summer and increase the wildlife habitat in your backyard. Although blackberries come in several growth habits, the erect habit is perhaps the easiest to grow. Once established, they can be cultivated for years, with peak production occurring in years 5 through 8. The first year canes, primocanes, are the vegetative growth, and the second year canes, floricanes, produce the sweet, tasty, antioxidant-packed fruit. For home gardeners, growing as a hedge is the easiest, although trellises or wires are an option. Once the floricanes are done fruiting, usually by late June, all you need to do is cut down the canes to about 12 inches above the soil level. Given enough time, new primocanes will grow from there and form the next season's floricanes. A second pruning after winter to remove any cold-damaged stems will aid in productivity. Blackberries can be purchased as plants or root cuttings. Once your blackberries are established, canes can be tip-layered to produce new plants. Bend down the tip of a vigorous cane, dig a shallow hole, bury the tip in the hole, water, and wait. Once a new shoot appears and the tip has rooted, cut the cane above the soil. That new shoot is the primocane necessary for future harvest. Left to their own devices, blackberries will do this on their own, but fruit production is greater if you manage them. Most cultivars of blackberries have killer thorns, making picking an experience. Although thornless cultivars exist, in my garden they are not as hardy. I think blackberries are enjoyed best straight from the bush, but they can be frozen and enjoyed as cobblers or crisps in the winter season. For best results, freeze the blackberries individually on a large tray. Birds, box turtles, lizards, butterflies, and other pollinators use blackberries for food and shelter throughout the year. Truly, blackberries nourish your body and, maybe more importantly, your connection to nature. Emmy Umschneider, Permian Basin Master Gardeners.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, 20. Permian Student Gives Back by Tony Venegas. James Gilley remembers the old brick amphitheater located in the middle of campus that his father, Tim, would take him to when he was younger. Tim Gilley, a Latin teacher at the school, would take his son to the old amphitheater and let him play around at that spot. Fast forward to the present day, and that old amphitheater is gone after it was torn down when a new section of the Permian High School campus was built. As for James, he's now a senior at Permian and working toward becoming an Eagle Scout. And for his service project requirement, he decided that he wanted to do something to give back to his school and leave a legacy behind. James Gilley spent the last 3 months putting together plans, getting supplies, and eventually building a brand new brick amphitheater now located in between the Permian Fieldhouse and the old gym. The labors of his work were completed Wednesday, and he officially presented it to faculty and staff at Permian High School Thursday evening. The amphitheater, Gilly said, will be used as a multi-use spot on campus for conducting class outdoors or even as a hangout spot. It's sort of an alternative outdoor classroom, he said. We would post about it on Facebook and get some comments if people could do plays, skits, and stuff like that. There's also a spot where if you stand on the middle brick, you can also get this amazing acoustic sound. Permian principal Delisa Stiles said that having the amphitheater will make a valuable addition to the campus. The timing could not have been more perfect, she said. As our students and staff come back to school in the most unusual times, it's great to have a special place where we can come outside and practice social distancing, but also have a place to visit or even have classes. It's really, really something that will be here for years to come, and we're just super excited about it. Seeing the project to its completion was a rewarding and an eye-opening experience for Gilly. In order to get the project started, he had to go through the proper channels at Permian and the Ector County Independent School District in order to get approval. Once he did that, he had to find a way to either pay for or have companies donate supplies. He was able to get that help from Hawkins Construction, Acme Brick, and Home Depot. Each company had a hand in putting the project together, whether it was providing labor or supplies. Getting everything that I needed and getting someone's word saying that they will do something, but the hardest part was getting that in writing, he said. I had to submit my Eagle packet saying that everything was paid for so that the scouts didn't have to pay for it. Once he got that approval, Gilly and other members from Boy Scout Troop 34 got to work. He credited them and all the other companies that helped him see the project through. I couldn't have done it without my scout troop, Gilly said. We knocked out cleaning things up whenever they were done with the foundation. We had humongous piles and truck beds full of dirt, sand, and rock, and they helped me take care of it in 2 or 3 days. Seeing that teamwork on display was also impressive to Scoutmaster Matthew Ellsworth. He said that Gilly had approached him about the idea a while back and said that he believed it was going to be an ambitious project. When he saw the plans, he was confident that he would be able to get the job done. It's impressive, Ellsworth said. I think it was 2 weekends ago that we were out here cleaning up some of the dirt that the contractors dug up, and basically we had a ring of cinder blocks. Now there are 3 steps, and it came together really fast. Stiles echoed the Scoutmaster's sentiment. I expected it to be a much more drawn-out project, just based on typical construction projects, she said. We were all really impressed with the timeline and how quickly it all came together. It says a lot about him and his team's work ethic and their ability to collaborate and make things happen. As for Gilly's journey to become an Eagle Scout, he's almost at the end of the line. He said he has one more merit badge to earn on financial management that he hopes to complete by the end of the year. When he looks back on his work, however, he says there's a lot of pride in being able to put this project together. I'm just relieved that we got it done, he said. I'm very happy with how it turned out. I can't wait to see how it's used and what my classmates think of it.
Pets of the week. Dulce, a 9-week-old female collie mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. She is black with white on her neck and her hind feet. Priscilla, a 6-year-old female cat, needs to be adopted into a good home. She is white with short hair and blue eyes. To adopt Dulce, Priscilla, or any of the other pets of the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503. Visit www.odessahumanesociety.org or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50.
Thank you for joining us for this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Far West Texas News, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 8. This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, John Wayne's Rio Bravo.
Yes, there'll never be another like Rio Bravo, with its thundering story of raw courage against overwhelming odds and its once-in-a-lifetime combination of today's hottest star names. You've seen nothing like them together, and here at Rio Bravo, nothing can tear them apart.
Not even a thank you do I get.
Maybe you're right, Stumpy.
Huh?
You're a treasure.
Well,
I don't know what I'd do without you.
Tired, aren't you, John T? I can fix you a nice hot bath.
All I want is a drink.
Then, this is all I can do for you?
Where are you going?
Get your hands off.
I said, where are you going?
You got no use for a man you can't depend on. One bad night and I'm done for.
This has been one of the few peaceful scenes from the picture Rio Bravo, with John Wayne, Dean Martin, and Walter Brennan here, and a new girl, Angie Dickinson.
Tell them about Ricky Nelson.
Oh, yeah, that's me. Come and see us.
The audio described Rio Bravo, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 54 and mostly cloudy. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 80s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the mid-70s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Coronavirus updates, weekdays at 1.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 7 a.m.
Because our regularly scheduled program was not available at broadcast time, we bring you the following special presentation. Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie reading the Big Bend Sentinel on August 27th. Facing pandemic and postal cuts, county officials prepare for hectic election. By Abby Perot and Steve Paulson. Tri-County. The United States Postal Service and concerns about restructuring and cuts at the agency has been in the news a lot lately. After a chronic budget issues exacerbated by the coronavirus, the Postal Service in April warned that it was facing insolvency. At press time, it's unclear how or whether changes at USPS have affected local residents. USPS did not answer questions about overtime hours and mail volume in Tri-County zip codes. And while the Big Bend Sentinel has filed records requests seeking this information, we have not received any records yet. USPS workers in the region